It is the Business Lunch Hour. I'm Bob Surratt.
I'm Marianne Murciano.
And with us from the Chicago Tribune, Blue Sky Innovation reporter John Carpenter, who covers all sorts of things, including startup ventures. And we've got some interesting technology to talk about, don't we, John?
Hi, John.
Yeah. Hi, how are you?
Let's get into the Northwestern researchers and what they've come up with first.
Well, this is, I learned a new word this week, haptic. Haptic technology, basically it means something you can feel. And this is technology that was developed at Northwestern a few years ago. It's still very early, but it basically uses a couple of different methods, but it creates friction on the screen of your smartphone or your tablet so that you can feel what you're looking at. If you take a picture of a grate or a corduroy shirt, then you look at the picture and you can run your fingers across it and you'll feel the bumps. And it's kind of fascinating. I thought it was a little bit gimmicky at first, but as I talked to these guys, there's obviously applications for like online shopping if you want to feel something you're thinking about buying. But I think maybe more interesting is a tablet keyboard. This is technology that could allow you to feel the keys and feel the edges of the keys in a car dashboard, which I think these intelligent displays are awesome in cars, but they're a little bit distracting. It could allow you to feel sort of knobs and have a tactile response.
So you wouldn't have to look at it.
Exactly. You know, you do it the old-fashioned way. You maybe glance at it, but then you can kind of feel it with your fingers.
Okay, so it sounds like it would be unbelievable to do. Like it sounds like it can't be possible to do.
Well, it is. I mean, I felt it when I talked to these guys. They took a picture, showed it. You know, we looked at the picture, and I ran my fingers across it. It's early technology.
You can actually grab a knob.
Well, you can't really grab a knob, but you could feel the edges of a knob. So, or what it does is it using ultrasonic waves, it creates or reduces friction in the screen. So as you're running your finger across it, you're either feeling smooth or you're feeling friction, and your mind translates that as a surface or an edge. And
wow.
So it's
pretty amazing.
It's not like 3D. It's not like a hologram or something like that. But I think, to me, the idea for a car is that, like in the old days where you would have a knob on a radio or the buttons on a radio, you would, you know, instead of having to look and find the station you want to go to, you can kind of, with your fingers, feel the edges of the buttons and know.
Well, that's down the road a while. We've been talking about the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and some of those products are coming to the stores this year. And you've been talking to some folks about these things. So what have you learned, John?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, to me, one of the more interesting things, and this kind of grows out of the haptic technology phone. I was talking to Greg Topol, who's the CEO of Tangible Haptics, which is a company that makes this thing. And he obviously spends a lot of time thinking about smartphone screens. And this isn't something that you're going to see anytime soon, but he actually believes that the trend is going to kind of shift and smartphone screens are going to start to get smaller as tablets get better and as laptops get lighter and more mobile. People are starting to feel like the size of the phones are a little bit awkward to talk on and hold
too
up
big.
To your ear. Too big. And but they love the big screens because they love to be able to shop and people love to be able to use mobile devices for all that stuff. But he thinks, at least, that the tablets and the laptops are going to kind of make it a little bit easier to do that.
I grabbed an iPhone 6 Plus
right.
The other day, and I just could not believe that people are actually using that to talk on the phone. I mean, I felt stupid. I felt like I was holding an iPad to my ear.
Exactly. But now, then again, it's also awesome, though, for other things. And I think the iPhone 6 Plus is selling pretty well. I've held them in my hand. And for a guy, you know, who tends to carry a phone in my pocket, it's also a little bit awkward, I think, more awkward for guys.
The Plus, but the regular size of the iPhone 6, which is now bigger than all the other iPhones
right.
in the past, to me, that's a perfect size. I mean, I wonder if technology is going to get to a point where we decide what is the perfect size.
Right. And he thinks, and I kind of agree, that it's for the phone, it's going to be a little bit smaller. And the phone is going to be the device that we text on, that we maybe check things real quickly. But when it comes to shopping, when it comes to other stuff that we are using our mobile devices for a ton, the tablets and the like super light, you know, these, you know, Mac Air and the, I think Microsoft has a tablet that has a keyboard. Those things are going to start to catch up to the smartphone.
It's very strange when you see someone taking a picture with an iPad, isn't
right?
it?
I know. Yeah, I've been to sporting events, you know, and you see parents holding up. It's like holding right. up a piece of paper,
I know,
and they're taking a picture.
It blocks everything. Yeah. I saw a movie. I think it was called iRobot. And I always think that what we see in the movies is eventually going to happen. And the smartphones there were actually paper thin. They rolled up
right.
into your pocket, like, you know, they rolled.
Yeah.
And then they unfurled in front of you, floating in front of you, you know, doing whatever. I mean, that yeah. there probably will come a day.
We'll be floating yeah. by then. And the other side of the coin, and this is hard to believe, but the Sony Walkman and the Polaroid camera were
right.
part of the Consumer Electronics Show
right.
this year.
Which I find is awesome. As a 52-year-old guy, I love that because I can remember when the Walkman came out and I was in college and we thought it was the most awesome thing in the world. The Walkman is a... Obviously, it's a digital device. It's bigger than an iPod. But its selling point is the music quality is better. The files aren't compressed the way MP3 uh-huh. files are compressed.
Yeah.
So for real audio files, there's a benefit. From what I've read, and I haven't heard it myself, if you're an average listener, you may not necessarily notice the sound quality difference, but an audiophile will.
It's richer, fuller, warmer.
Right, exactly. But it's $1,200 too. It's very expensive. But to me, one of the things that I've noticed is I think people are using their phones increasingly to listen to music, but it takes up a lot of room on your phone, and
yes.
also uses your battery. So that's the first thing I thought of when I saw this is it's going to take a little pressure off your phone, and it's a device that you can keep in your pocket.
So maybe we'll go back to separate devices for music.
Right.
But
yeah.
how does that compare to people using, not storing music on their phones anymore, but using services such as Spotify
right.
and what's the other one?
Pandora.
Pandora.
Yeah.
I mean, like Rhapsody, you would think that you don't need to store that music anymore.
Right, right. I think so. I mean, obviously for the musicians, they want to figure out the cost end of that, but I think they're starting to figure that out. What I don't know is whether Spotify and Pandora compress the files more than they need to for something like the Walkman, but you know, to me it's interesting. But it is yet another device.
Yeah, it's just like vinyl, and
yeah.
it's not old fogies buying the vinyl.
No,
young
no.
people
oh my
are,
gosh, yeah,
and
yeah.
They're into the sound, so there is hope for the future generations.
Right, right.
And the Polaroid camera?
The Polaroid camera, it's an updated version of the Polaroid. I'm guessing everybody knows what a Polaroid is. You know, the old Polaroid cameras where you take a picture and the picture comes right out. I thought it was dead and gone. But the new Polaroid camera is sort of socially enabled. They call it the Social-matic. So you can, allows you to take and edit pictures and post them on Instagram and various
mm-hmm.
sites. But it also will print out a physical copy of your picture in a small version that you can peel the back off and stick it on somewhere. So if
that's
this thing,
cool.
It is cool. If it catches on, I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of pictures all over the place.
Because we take pictures and we never print them. And
right.
Then, you know, they end up who knows where.
Yeah.
You never see them most
of
the time.
There's no physical evidence of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We my family had trouble finding family pictures for our Christmas card because they were all on our phones.
Exactly.
And we hadn't put
yeah.
them onto our computer so where we could use them.
Yeah.
Finally, this is a great idea. We've all been to sporting events or concerts, and the hassle of parking
right.
can ruin the event. But somebody's come up with a concept that will help with this. Explain it.
ParkWiz is a Chicago startup. Helps you find parking spaces. I actually used it last month and went to see Wilco at the Riviera, which is not an easy place to find a parking spot, but it's a piece of cake for us. They've partnered up with StubHub, I don't know how often you use StubHub, but it's a great way to find tickets at the last minute, especially tickets that are hard to get. And to me, it's a great partnership because StubHub really caters to people who are making a late decision to go see an event, and often those are people who kind of need to, you know, maybe it's a business event, maybe they're meeting a friend, maybe, you know, it's a last minute date or something, and you really don't want to have a hassle to find your parking spot.
Yeah, circling
so,
around. So you'll be able to reserve a space,
exactly.
get a pass. How will it work?
You go online and this is what we did at the Riv, you know, you you tell ParkWiz where you're going, and it tells you where the parking nearby is, and you can reserve a spot. And now that's all tied into StubHub. So when you order your ticket on StubHub, that will be an option for you. And, you know, to me, it's a great idea because, you know, there are some places you can get to on the L or in a cab, but other places you really want to drive to, and nothing ruins an evening like, you know, getting somewhere and spending half an hour finding or not finding a parking spot.
Yeah, I mean, and also, well, the cost, though, I mean, sometimes you're paying more for parking than for the event, too.
Right.
But this is all going to be a sort of a one fee through StubHub?
Or it's an add-on fee. ParkWiz is, you know, the site that I just actually looked at it this morning, and, you know, it was $20 parking spots and $15 parking spots, which, you know, at an event, at a venue for a spot in a lot. That's about
not bad today.
Yeah.
It's John Carpenter, more in the Tribune's Blue Sky Innovation Department. Thanks as always, John.
You're welcome. Thanks.
This is our Manilow song of the day. We'll replay it later, and at that time, you can call in to win. Here are the details. We'll take the first caller today at 312-981-7200 let's say between 1:15 and 1:30. Between 1:15 and 1:30, when you hear this, just call in. And if you're caller number one at 312-981-7200, you qualify for that Barry Manilow prize package. Concert tickets for the United Center February 14th. Dinner, CDs, and DVDs as well. That's coming up later, right here.
Business Lunch with Surratt and Marciano.
Let's head into the business class department, and our friend Johnny Jett, proprietor of the very comprehensive travel website, johnnyjett.com. And where in the world are you today?
Hi, Johnny.
How you guys doing? I'm in sunny Los Angeles.
Well, I'm sure you're warmer than we are, but we do have some sunshine at least today, and it actually felt warm outside a couple hours ago compared to the sub-zero we've been through. People are talking about travel, getting out of town, going somewhere warm, and I was just looking at something. I think it was the New York Times, and they were talking about how packages are the way to go. This little article said you spend a lot of time searching online travel agencies, but have you ever clicked the packages tab? And the point of this piece was sometimes that's a really good idea to put a hotel and a flight together and save a lot of money. Is that your experience, Johnny?
Without a doubt. On certain destinations, for example, one time I was flying LA to Aspen and I was booking flights, and I think I was on Expedia or Travelocity or Orbitz, and it said my flight was $450. And then I noticed if you book a hotel with this, the price will be $350, and you get two nights hotel. And I'm like, that makes no sense at all.
And how do you find those deals?
So all the big online travel agencies have, they put together packages. Usually it requires two people and, you know, a return trip, so you can't do it one way. It's all, especially destinations like Hawaii, or Vegas, or you know any vacation destination. It's a great way to save money. Australia, England, Canada. I mean, wherever these people are going for vacation.
Yeah, this piece pointed out that it's not that unusual to pay less for the plane fare and the hotel together than you would have paid just for the flight.
Exactly. I mean, that was my experience as well. So what I would do even sometimes, if I didn't need a hotel, if I was staying with family or friends, I would book a package and then just throw out the hotel voucher, or you can do a car rental. But I mean, I actually have a lot of these deals on my travel deals section on my website, and so you can just click them. And the package deals are the way to go, as well as cruises, which I've mentioned many times. I mean, it's the best value out there.
Hey, Johnny, you know what I have been very surprised by? I need to make a trip to Flint, Michigan. And
okay.
So it's very close. All right. I can't believe how expensive it is. If I tried to book a flight for today, I would pay nearly $500 to go to a place that is like a little over an hour away by plane. And I'm wondering if it's because it's not a very popular place to go that they can jack up the prices and have fewer flights. Is that what the problem is?
Exactly. I mean, I could fly L.A. New York, which is 2,500 miles, for $159. But for me to fly L.A. to Santa Barbara, which is 120 miles, would cost twice the price.
Yeah. And there are no package deals available then in places like that, right?
No, there won't be a package deal because it's not a vacation destination. So these guys are targeting mostly business travelers since, you know, the only people who are really going up there this time of year or any time is our business travelers, and they, you know, they know those guys will fork over the big bucks.
All right,
but
and
did you book way in advance too, by the way, because usually 21 days in advance would help.
Yeah, but who can do that? I need to go tomorrow.
Yeah, Marianne's opening up a Buick dealership, trying to revive GM single-handedly in Flint.
All right, so Johnny, I know we've touched on this before, but once again, set the record straight. What is the Hidden City ticketing trick, and should I use it?
You should. Well, I would not use it, but the reason why you should not use it is because if you do get caught, the airlines will take away your miles or possibly make you pay a fare difference. So what it is, let's say one time I was trying to get from L.A. to Cleveland, and I was pricing out fares for a one-way ticket, and it was $500. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And then I was looking at alternate airports near there. So I put in Buffalo, which is almost 200 miles away, or actually is 200 miles away. But I noticed the fare was $250. And that flight was actually stopping in Cleveland. It was actually the same exact flight that was going for $500. And then you'd get on another plane and go to Buffalo. And everything would be $230. And I was like, well, that's a steal. So what people do is they'll book the ticket from, you know, L.A. to Buffalo and then get off the plane in Cleveland. But the way around it is, you know, you cannot check a bag. You got to make sure you're on the plane relatively early, because if you do have a carry-on bag and it doesn't fit, they're going to make you gate check it, and they're going to send it to your final destination, so that's not going to help. So there are risks involved. It's against airline policy. It's not illegal, but I've never done it, and I book dozens and dozens of tickets a year. I almost did it once.
Okay. We don't want you to get caught and lose all your miles, Johnny. That would be terrible.
Oh, we could still talk to you, though, from prison. They have phones there. Finally, this is very interesting. Wall Street Journal story yesterday, headline, one round trip ticket, two prices. And there were examples of fares on round trips that really vary depending on where you start. For example, there was a New York Kennedy to London Heathrow fare of $2,500. But then if you fly London to New York, the other way is only $1,600. L.A. to Honolulu, $614. Honolulu to Los Angeles, just $571. What's behind all of that? And is there a way for us to save some money because of that?
Well, that is another thing. That is demand. So I'm having breakfast right now while I was speaking with some Australians. And so Australia is notoriously much cheaper. To, you know, actually, it's usually cheaper for them to fly from L.A. to Australia, so they would try and figure out a way to get a ticket from here to there. So the problem with that routing is that you would have to make you'd have to at least buy two round-trip tickets and start one in your first destination. So if you want to go from Chicago to London, and it's pricing out a lot higher than London to Chicago, you know, the only way you could do that is if you, you know, find a London travel agent or go onto a website and make it think that you're in London. But some of these websites are going to require you to have the local address.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are some ways around it. It's just, it all depends on the site. It's tricky, but I know one way you can do it is by getting a good local travel agent, and you can search that online or.
Yeah.
And
international
I've
flights.
I've never done it, but I've heard about many people doing it.
Yeah, flights overseas had the biggest directional price differences. More on johnnyjet.com. That's the place for travel tips, information on airfares, hotels, and much more. And as always, happy, safe travels to you, Johnny, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take
Thanks,
care.
Johnny.
It's time for our social media check, and the So Social columnist of the Tribune, Scott Kleinberg, is here. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you guys
Hi,
doing?
Scott.
We are following with everybody else the terror in Paris, and so are a lot of folks on social media, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. And Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook came out with a post that has almost 400,000 likes and lots of comments. And I don't know how many people know this, but a few years ago, there was this extremist group in Pakistan that fought to have him sentenced to death because of the things that were posted on Facebook. So he wanted to come out specifically and say that there is no way in the world Facebook is going to back down at a time like this.
Right.
And he's been responding to a lot of people's comments from around the world asking questions about it. And it's really interesting to watch.
That's what all on Facebook.
What are people saying at this point? I mean, what are people talking about? Just spreading the word that the two brothers have died and that the hostages are free?
Well, spreading the word, there's a lot of relief, obviously, that the thing is, you know, over as far as they can tell. The French president's supposed to talk soon, so there's that. So there's a lot of you know a lot of sympathy, and that's been ongoing too.
And we'll sort out the news in our 1 o'clock report too. There were conflicting reports about the hostages,
yes,
killed, wounded, freed. Unfortunately, the recent news is not good about the hostages. So
yeah,
we'll update you at 1 o'clock on that. Interesting update from Pew. These are the folks who do all that polling, and
yep,
I was surprised to see these numbers regarding social media. For the first time, more than half of all online adults 65 and older now use Facebook.
Now use Facebook, yes. And also interesting, a lot of online adults are using more than one social network. It used to be a thing where they were picking their favorites, and now they're using two or more. 52% are using two or more. 42% were only using two or more back in 2013. So that says a lot about people's interest in new platforms.
And the reason why young people are dropping Facebook, 31% of all seniors are now using Facebook.
Yes. And it's interesting because I actually read an article yesterday written by a 19-year-old who was talking about how teenagers really feel about social media, not just what you read. And he said that is exactly what we've been thinking all along. The fact that parents and grandparents are on Facebook make them want to use it less.
But yeah. I mean, really, is it really that, or is it just that it's much more instant to communicate via Instagram, Snapchat, and all these other methods? I mean, I don't see a big plot by my kids saying, well, yeah, I don't want to do it because you're on it.
Well, I think it's a subconscious thing.
I think it's that. And this article also went on to say that, you know, there are no, like, for example, on Instagram, there's no links to click on for stories. It's just looking at photos. They don't like the fact that sometimes they're forced to click on things and look at things. People who are young, that is. So that's an interesting trend.
And in terms of popularity, though, Facebook is still number one, isn't it?
Yes. Facebook is definitely still number one. And in fact, it's interesting because Twitter is all the way down at number 5 in the rankings. It's Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter, the top 5.
And more video, I guess, will be part of Facebook. They've acquired Quickfire Networks. I don't know what that means, Scott.
It's basically this startup that says we can reduce the amount of bandwidth that it takes to watch a video without reducing the quality at all.
Mm.
So that's the kind of thing where you figure Facebook has 1.3 billion users. It's serving up 1 billion video views on average every day, which is a number that's really hard to wrap your head around to begin with. If they can find a way to make video better, especially on mobile devices, I think that's something that's definitely in their best interest.
Another thing that people are buzzing about and buying, apparently, the selfie stick. We're hearing a lot about this lately. What's up with that?
I'm so torn by this thing. I mean, it's basically a monopod. I mean, photographers have been using them for the longest time, but now they have specific ones you use to attach your phone to it. And the coolest thing in the world is to stand in front of the Grand Canyon or stand on the Las Vegas Strip or wherever and hold this thing in front of you and take the most amazing selfie you've ever taken.
Well, the reason I think that I would want to have one, except that I wouldn't want to carry it around,
is because
you look so much better if it's, if you know, your arm is never long enough. to incorporate a lot of people or to look great.
But is it just me? I am frightened about holding my iPhone 40 inches out in front of me and have it fall. I mean, I know there's a way to supposed to hold it. But
oh, yeah, it would hold it.
I don't trust it. I'm just not ready
for that hard case.
I need to do that, too. That's true.
Some of us need longer arms just to read magazines and papers, if you know what I mean. Maybe we could use the selfie stick for that, to hold printed pages further away.
There's
an idea. If you can't see up close.
Or just get reading glasses, Bob.
Well, yeah, there is that. The fancy coffee machines you see at work now, many of them offer tea, but very soon now you're going to be able to get soda, juice, sports drinks out of these little capsules.
Yeah, I saw this trending and I was really surprised because I hadn't heard about this, but it's basically a cold version of the hot coffee machines where there'll be some kind of, you know, mixture of syrup and soda in these little pods, and you put them in with carbonated water and you'll be able to make your own soda at home. I personally don't understand why I'd want to do that. I'd just walk to the fridge and pour it, but you know, people like that kind of stuff. That's okay.
Well, maybe juice.
Juice, I guess I can see. Iced tea, I don't know. I guess it depends on the strength you want it. You could change the strength like you change the strength of coffee. I guess it makes sense.
Well, it's like the idea of using that pod, right?
Yes.
And it's just more convenience.
I suppose it is. Like I suppose just, storing it I would guess. Make it much easier.
Is but that that one company, that one that makes them? What is it?
Keurig, right?
Keurig.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I don't understand how you could get a soda out of that.
I think it's the syrup. I'm guessing that the pod would contain the syrup, and then you'd put carbonated water in as opposed to regular water for coffee, and then it would mix and, you know, magically turn into soda.
All right. Have a
stop
healthy weekend.
Soda.
Scott Kleinberg, So Social in the Tribune, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks,
Take
Scott.
Care, guys.
Thanks.
This is the Business Lunch with Surat Marciano on 720 WGN.
Anytime the music can play now, that's how it works. Okay. Yeah, it's Friday, January 9, and if you've been in the West Loop, you know how revitalized that area is. And there is a food hall that is getting a lot of attention there. It's been there for a while, and it probably is at least partially responsible for what's happening in the West Loop. With us to talk about the French Market is Marianne Giraki, the Director of Leasing and Marketing. And it's been quite a success story for you, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We started in December of 2009, so we just celebrated our fifth anniversary. It's exciting because we have 30 different vendors in there, 15,000 square feet. We have everything in there from ethnic foods like Vietnamese, Korean, Mexican, Indian, lobster rolls, barbecue. We have raw food there, Marianne, for you who like raw foods.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Why is it called the French Market, then? Why is it French?
Because it was developed by two partners, U.S. Equities, and then the other partner was the Benzedoun family, and the Benzedouns are located in Paris. A very interesting family. It's a generational group. They have almost 100 different markets in Paris and in the surrounding areas. They also have 17 different markets in the Chicagoland area. There are 13 in Chicago and then 4 in New York.
Give us a little bit of the history of the market. When did it open? What
Sure.
was there before? What was the genesis of all this?
Well, it's my understanding that it was a parking lot. It was the back end of Ogilvie train station. So we're in between Clinton and Canal, Randolph and Washington, and it was a parking lot. So years ago, Bob Wislow from U.S. Equities, now CBRE, decided he wanted to develop the area. He went into a 99-year lease agreement with Metra and Union Pacific. Remember, the trains are above us. We're street level, so the trains come in on the second floor, and then
you hear them.
You hear them. It's actually quite quaint. Yeah, yeah. Have you been to the market?
I've been there, and I've noticed in the last year or so, various travel magazines,
yes.
And also I know the Reader said you are the best gourmet market around.
That's right.
On these lists of the must-visit food halls across America, you're always listed now.
Thank you.
You're
yes.
doing something right.
Yes. You know, there's a lot of work, and there's a lot of people that I always talk about the owners and then also our vendors, because that's really what it is. And I could do leasing, and I can search out great products, and we can market the market, but the most important thing to me is the food in the market. And there's 30 individual vendors. One of them that we have is Sophie Evanoff, and she's with Vinnie Patisserie. Fantastic story. She's got a beautiful place on Clark Street as well as the French Market. And she has the most gorgeous French pastries.
And yum. Sophie's here. Was it hard to get in? I imagine a lot of folks want to sell their wares there.
Yeah, Vinnie has been part of the market since the beginning. And one of the attraction was it is the French market and we are a French business. Mm-hmm. So it was the perfect fit. And we've seen the growth, I mean, tremendously over the past 5 years. And it's been a pleasure. And without our market location, it wouldn't have given us an opportunity to expand to
Clark
Street.
We should say that the market is indoors.
Yes.
And what are the hours and days it's open?
We open our doors at 7 in the morning and we close at 7:30 on weekdays, Saturday 8:30 to 5:30.
And where do you park if you're going to be driving there?
We have a convenient parking lot just north of us, and it's so you just park there. You can park free if you buy $20 worth of products, get it stamped from the vendors, and you can park free there.
So it's a good place to go and buy. The food is already made.
That's
right?
Correct.
And are there also like produce areas available?
Yes.
Where you can buy
And that's what makes it a food hall versus a food court. There are prepared foods, but we truly are a market as well. So Sophie will sell beautiful croissants or macaroons, and then there's somebody who will sell beautiful olive oils or our raw products. So you can buy already made kale chips. You could buy flowers in the shop. You can buy different coffees and teas. So there's a lot of things that you can take home with you. We've got a new vendor called Lolly and Pops who has 30 feet of handmade truffles. So it's all truffles. So Valentine's Day is key for us. It's our best day of the year is Valentine's Day, and they're going to be a huge hit.
I bet you get many, many tourists there, and are so many folks around Chicago who live here who don't know about your market.
And you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because sometimes you feel like, oh, how do you not know about it? But I'll get in every cab, and every cab knows about us now, which 4 years ago when I started, they had no idea where the French market was. So it's a growth in process. It's always growing. There's always new great vendors in there. We just leased a new vendor. Next month will be Black Dog Gelato. She has two other locations in Chicago. So what we do is we look for the best of the best artisans, and that's are all in one location.
How's business, Sophie?
It's great.
Yeah, and people come out in the winter because they know it's inside.
This week's been a little tough.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
How, Marion, do you think you've influenced the renaissance of the West Loop?
Well, we weren't the only pioneers, but we definitely anchor the east end of it. There are pioneers like One-Off Hospitality, which is Blackbird and Avec. There are other people who have definitely anchored the area. A big development in the area, adding the Morgan Street L, was huge to us. We have an L stop on Clinton, but the next L stop would have been Morgan, and that adds a lot.
So where do you get off if you're on the L?
On Clinton.
You get off on Clinton,
yep.
And then how far do you have to walk?
A half a block.
Oh, that's now, so convenient.
So convenient. Now, Sophie lives in our neighborhood as well. So you'll see that there's major developments for apartment buildings, luxury apartment buildings. We also have a lot of condos in the area. Remember, Presidential Towers was one of the pioneers. You look back to the 80s, you know, they stood by themselves. Them mm-hmm. and Old St. Pat's, they were the only ones that stood in the area.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, if you're listening to this and thinking, I've not made it down there, I want to do that. Again, the location and the hours, Marion.
The location is 131 North Clinton. Again, we're between Clinton and Canal, Randolph and Washington street level. Our hours on weekdays are 7 to 7, right?
7:30.
I'm sorry. Thanks, Sophie. And Saturday is 8:30 to 5:30.
And you are not there Sunday, correct?
We are not on Sunday.
Okay.
Once, as we develop the market, you never know what's going to happen. But right now, we don't foresee opening on Sunday.
All right. Well, continue. Good luck to you and good success.
I can't wait to go and see you.
Come and visit us.
Yes, I'm going to come visit.
Thanks, Marion.
Thank you very much.
And,
thank
Sophie,
you.
Appreciate you stopping by, too.
Thank you.
This is the Business Lunch with Surat Marciano on 720 WGN.